from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and by the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting the 2011-2012 season in three first-class venues.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll get the lowdown on the John Waters Festival that's making Indy a bit more like Baltimore.
I'll find out about the Making a Jewish Home exhibit at the Indiana Historical Society.
And I'll take a look at this year's Acoustic Cafe music series. Plus, we'll also have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. IMOCA, Big Car Gallery, the Heron School of Art and Design, and the Indianapolis LGBT Film Festival are partnering together to bring a bit of Baltimore to Indy, or at least to bring filmmaker John Waters to Indy. The partnership includes screenings of his films, an art exhibit, and Waters' own one-man vaudeville show. Travis DiNicola spoke with Shate Marsh from Big Car and Paula Katz from Heron about this collaboration.
Paula, Shate, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you both in the studio.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
This is really fun. I am so excited that the two of you, and there's so many partners that are a part of this, but are bringing John Waters to town, are being able to show his movies and his artwork. Let's sort of backtrack a little bit and give me some background as far as how this first started, because there's a lot of moving parts here.
Well, Paula and Jeremy Ephraimson and I, we decided as a whole we wanted to do something for Spirit in Place, and at first we had wanted to do something on meditation, and then after a few we had several meetings, and finally we
and meditation led to John Waters.
Well, it did when we couldn't eventually. Yes, it did.
Well, I'm a big meditator. I try to meditate daily, although I hope nobody knows how bad my practice can be sometimes. And we were actually interested in David Lynch, who is also a big advocate for transcendental meditation.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
From that, we kind of jumped to film directors. So that's really, and then John Waters was really the
and David
person.
Lynch, of course, Blue Velvet and many other films. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like all the time that I hear David Lynch being interviewed now, he is talking about meditation, not so much about films.
Right.
But is John Waters, do you know, is he an active practitioner? Or is it, or was
no.
just the film
no,
connection?
No, it was the film connection. And,
okay.
And honestly, you know, when things weren't working out with David Lynch, who I'm a huge fan of his movies, and I'm also a fan of John Waters movies, you know, we were brainstorming, and I have been I've been really disappointed with, Indiana's anti-gay legislation, and I thought, it's kind of embarrassing to look that way to the rest of the nation and the rest of the world, in my opinion, and I thought, well, when Paul and I were talking, Paul was like, hey, how about John Waters? And so, that made perfect sense to me and with what is going on. Because I always try to think about whenever we do programming, what's happening, what can we offer Indianapolis? What different voices and perspectives can we offer? So it's not just my personal taste, but I always try to think about what's happening in our city and our state and what IMOCA and Big Car and can offer to the city.
Well, and looking at John Waters, I mean, it's kind of interesting because if you think of who he is now and his career now, in many ways, he's almost, I won't say quite, but almost mainstream. in terms of, you know, his popularity, you know, certainly with Hairspray and then the musical and so on. But then, you know, if you think back to the early mid 80s or even, you know, early 90s, you know, you'd be hard pressed to find someone who was more controversial at that time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think he helped make, you know, definitely drag culture mainstream. Mm-hmm. You know, people just really, he's able to help people, you know, he helps people connect to each other through his films and his work. So that I think he was a huge part of making that more mainstream.
Now, I know that, you know, at this point, when we're airing this, actually a couple of the movies that through this partnership have been shown at Heron have actually already taken place. I know that Pink Flamingos was shown, as well as Polyester, both really just bizarre and interesting films. How was the, when you guys showed Pink Flamingos, how was the reception for that at Heron?
We had about 100 people, and Kevin Kelly came and introduced the film, and I guess I could say he warned people there'd be some shocking footage that at a certain point when it was screening in Baltimore, John Waters literally had to cut those segments out of the film, was censored. And of those 100 people, we had one person walk out, which I thought was great.
Not bad.
was kind of sitting in the back and had a view of the whole theater, and people were laughing, and a big round of applause when the movie was finished. So it was a big success, and I think just for our students, it's interesting. You know, one student said, "Oh, I'm so excited! He was on The Simpsons." And it kind of gives you a different perspective of what a slightly younger generation has and what they're familiar with in terms of John Waters. So it's great to introduce these films to them as well.
Yeah, especially Polyester and Pink Flamingos are really, I mean, kind of the two most controversial, and certainly his earlier work and such. Now, and the next one that you guys have coming up is of the P films is Pecker, which is going to be shown on November 2nd at the Heron School of Art and Design's Basile Auditorium. So that's great that you guys are doing that.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You look like you wanted to jump in, Sean.
Oh, no, I didn't.
So now with, you know, in addition to bringing the films here, what is really, really cool is you're bringing John Waters here.
Yes.
So tell me all about that.
Well, he's going to come to the Madam Walker on November 12th.
Mm-hmm.
Paula and I have just been working a lot on logistics and things like that, and she really loved the Madam Walker Theater, and so we went and we looked at it, and I agreed it was really the perfect location for and he, when we sent him the information, he really loved the look of the venue. Mm-hmm. As well, so we're also,
yeah, that's cool. It's such a beautiful space.
Yeah.
Now, what is his show like? Because it's a one man show. I mean, is it
it's a one
lecture
man
or
show.
Reading or performance?
He describes it as a vaudeville act, and it's mm-hmm. actually, you can get an idea of what it's like off the. He does have a DVD of the same title of the show, because the show's called This Filthy World.
Okay.
But the what he'll be performing here in Indianapolis, he's never performed before, so it's actually not the same as the DVD. So mm-hmm. it's especially for Indianapolis.
That's very cool. So what? Because I know you've been in contact with him and with his assistants and such. And what has he said as far as, you know, coming to Indianapolis? I mean, is he excited? Is he looking forward to it? Is he like, what am I doing here?
He's really excited about it. He's really a nice guy, and he I think he'd been here maybe 15 years ago or, mm-hmm. or maybe 20. I can't remember. He had said he'd been here before one other time and was really excited to come back. And I know it's going to be a great show. You know, he's just been all over the place lately, you know, on Bill Maher and on mm-hmm. The Daily Show. And, you know, he always makes appearances in a lot of popular culture music videos. So I think that people will really enjoy the show and him, because he's such a great speaker and such a great person.
Yeah, that's gonna be fantastic to see him. I can't wait to see him live. Now, before his show, The Filthy World, which is taking place on November 12th, I know that you've got an art exhibit of work that's been inspired by water. It's called Bodies of Waters.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a bit about that.
Yeah, IMOCA has partnered with Big Car, and I curated the exhibit. So there's a few local favorites that I have that I've asked to be in the show, and then there's several very well-known pop surrealist artists such as Glenn Barr and Anaya Kuhn, and it's going to be a great show. And they made these pieces based off of John Waters' movie characters, so that's why it's called Bodies of Waters,
Okay.
I wanted it to fall in line with the spirit and place theme of the body. So yeah, I have been, the artists have been sending me images. There's around 17 participating artists in the show, and they're really excited to be part of it. A lot of these people just really are huge fans of John Waters and are very excited that he's going to get to see the work himself as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That'll be excellent.
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of partners that are involved in this. This is part of Spirit in Place Festival.
Yeah.
We've talked about Big Car and IMOCA, and the Indianapolis LGBT Film Festival is really involved.
Mm-hmm.
Paula, tell me a bit about, why is it important for Heron to be involved with this?
Well, it's just so important. I think, as Shate already said, In regard to bringing in somebody, I think, who is also an advocate for some issues that are going on in our community. But John Waters is such an interesting person, too. He was in art school for a hot second. But he's also a visual artist as well. And
mm-hmm.
I think he's just such a creative person and has really done so much and transgressed so many boundaries that I think it'll be really valuable for our students and obviously our greater community as well.
I know also that, and you guys are making it really accessible, there's different discounts for Heron students as well as IMOCA members and things
mm-hmm.
like that for the different things. What's the best way for people to find out the schedule of the upcoming events?
Our website, www.indymocha.org,
okay.
is the best way to find out what's going on. On the homepage, I have a listing of everything that's going on that Paul and I have partnered on and for this event.
Cool. Okay.
This appearance.
Excellent. So let me ask the two of you, each personally, what's your favorite John Waters film and why?
The first John Waters film that I ever watched, and I was probably around 8 years old, and my parents, did not believe in censorship. So I saw many movies far worse. Actually, Crybaby is pretty.
It's pretty tame.
It's pretty tame comparatively to his other movies. But I just was, interested in Tracy Lord's, mm-hmm. character, and then. Then, even at that age, you hear things about, it seems like he would always select different people that at that time were famous for interesting things to be in his movies,
uh-huh.
and at that time it was Tracy Lords, and there was that huge issue of her being in porn when
mm-hmm.
she was underage. So, I think that was maybe, I remember hearing that because my friend whose house I watched at had an older brother who was a football player, and he was like talking about it, and I was like, oh my gosh, what's that about,
Yeah, just crazy stuff.
That crazy stuff, yeah.
Paula, how about you?
Well, I have to confess that probably the first John Waters film I saw was Hairspray,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes musicals kind of freak me out a little bit, but have been, especially with him coming here, have been rewatching and actually watching some movies that I hadn't seen before. I'd say Polyester's a favorite of mine. It's tamer than some of his other films, but it's so kitschy, and there's still that sense of the absurdity with the very dysfunctional children of the family. And you know, one of my favorite scenes is Tab Hunter on the side of the road, and there's been a car accident, and you know, he just picks up a decapitated head and said, "There's been a car accident. Do you want to go for a ride?" You know, to Divine's character, and you know, she's thrilled to get in the car with this hunk of a man, and just the absurdity of that, and how he somehow, Waters gets the characters to play it off like this is how it should be, you know.
Yeah, they never seem surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think John Waters picks up on these little unsavory truths about humanity and then blows them up, you know, so then we can like really accurately see ourselves yet laugh about it at the same time, you know, like you're like, I'm really uncomfortable, this is kind of true, you know, but it's so funny. So that's, yeah. And the other thing, you know, that Paul and I have talked about with this and wanting to bring John Waters here and, you know, wanting to bring David Lynch here, that the reason it kind of came to those two people is, you know, a lot of time, I mean, I work a lot with Paula. She's definitely one of my favorite people to work with. And she, so we, I also have a lot of interaction with Heron students. And a lot of times I'll be talking to these kids and they won't know who David Lynch is and they won't know who John Waters is. And I'm like, oh my gosh, am I that old, you know? And you're like, they should know who these people are, and they should see their films.
Travis DiNicola with Shate Marsh from Big Car Gallery and Paula Katz from the Heron School of Art and Design. You can see John Waters' one-man vaudeville show, This Filthy World, as part of the Spirit in Place Festival, November 12th, 7 o'clock, at the Madam Walker Theater. Discount tickets are available at IMOCA, Heron School of Art, Big Car Gallery, and Service Center at Lafayette Square. Waters' film Pecker will be shown at Heron at 7 p.m. on November 2nd. The Bodies of Waters exhibit will be taking place at the Big Car Gallery, opening on November 4th. For more information, visit bigcar.org or indiemocha.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
The Indiana Historical Society is continuing its mission to serve as Indiana's storyteller with its newest You Are There exhibition, which is a family story of tragedy, courage, and new beginnings. You Are There, 1950, Making a Jewish Home. It opened last week and runs through September 29th of next year. The You Are There exhibit, part of the Society's Indiana History Center Indiana Experience, allows guests to step through and into an IHS collections photograph that has been recreated three-dimensionally. In Making a Jewish Home, guests can visit Benny and Fanny Kaplan's Union Street home in a Southside Indianapolis neighborhood on April 5, 1950, just a year after their resettlement from a post-World War II displaced persons camp. The recreated scene at the History Center features Fanny ladling soup to serve for a family meal. In the new experience, guests will join Mrs. Kaplan as she prepares a kosher meal and learn how Hoosier Hospitality helped the Kaplans create a new home. Sharon Gamble invited Eloise Scroggins, IHS Director of Exhibitions Research, and Amy Lamb, IHS Media Relations Manager, to our studio to find out how the exhibit came to be.
This is part of the You Are There series of exhibits at the Historical Society, where we recreate photographs from our collection and invite visitors to step back in time. So we are always looking for a photograph that first and foremost is an interesting scene to step into. Mm-hmm. This is a photograph we knew we wanted to do something with food. So we had kind of toyed around with a couple of other images that showed food or a kitchen setting, thinking that that would be a very welcoming environment from past scenes to invite our visitors back into. Kitchens and food is such a unifying factor between all of us.
And it doesn't change from one decade to another.
It really doesn't. It really doesn't. And it's a setting that is so ripe and inviting for storytelling. It's a scene that you can walk into and you automatically feel comfortable talking and sharing. So we knew that was the type of environment we were going for. We found this photograph in our collection. It is part of the Jewish Federation Welfare Collection, which is a collection we had not used in an exhibit before. So we were very excited to find this particular photograph and began exploring the possibilities of doing this as a You Are There, and then uncovered this incredibly rich story about the people shown in the photograph, specifically the woman in the primary photo that we're using as our You Are There, Fanny Kaplan. She and her family had been brought to the United States and brought to Indianapolis specifically after the U.S. started accepting displaced persons at the end of World War II.
For someone who doesn't know what displaced persons were.
Sure. Well, as you know, World War II over in Europe was an incredibly disruptive event and left a lot of people homeless or displaced from their homes or their countries of origin. And so in the years right after the end of World War II, there was a big effort made internationally to find homes for people. And in some cases, the ideal situation would have been to be able to return to your original homeland and your original home. But in a lot of cases, that just simply wasn't possible or wasn't desirable. And for this family, it was a Jewish family that had come from Poland. Really did receive a tremendous amount of damage and devastation during World War II. So the Jewish population specifically was incredibly uprooted at the end of World War II. And so the diaspora or the dissemination of Polish Jews really is a worldwide phenomenon. So after the U.S. started accepting displaced persons after World War II was over, this was one of the first families to be brought to the U.S. and specifically brought to Indianapolis. So here's this photograph that we selected because it showed food. Right. And it showed this woman in her kitchen, which on the surface is such a comfortable, warm, very safe and kind of nurturing photograph. And it indeed stays that.
But then you get to explore the journey of
exactly.
what an arduous road, because she and her husband lived in a displaced persons camp in Germany for 3 years before getting to find a home. So she must have really cherished the ability to have a kitchen again, to have a kitchen of her own, to be able to make food for her family.
And that's exactly the point of this, is that just the simple act of preparing soup and dishing soup into a bowl, which is what the photograph shows her doing, is so tremendous when you think of what it took for her to get here.
Right.
And the act of feeding her children, which she had two children in a displaced persons camp, which, you know, as you can just imagine how unsettling of an experience that would be. Yet here she is. She's survived the Holocaust and lost family members during it, and comes over to the U.S. and now has this home, and she's able to raise her children safely and prepare meals for them. Things that we take for granted today, she had a very real connection to how special and wonderful that was for her as a mother to be able to give to her family. So exactly, it takes a very simple image and what might seem like a very simple, mundane, everyday activity for us and really puts it in a historical context of, in our history, simple events take on incredibly new meaning when you realize what you've gone through to get there.
And this is such a beautiful example of your organization's mission to be Indiana's storyteller, because in the process of researching, I understand that you found relatives, descendants of the Kaplans?
We did. We've worked very closely with a woman named Rosie Kaplan, who is the daughter of Fanny, the woman shown in the photograph. Rosie is one of the two children who was born in the displaced persons camp in Germany. And we have become very dear friends with her. And some of our staff went out and spent time with her in California and really took great care to make sure that we were representing her family's history to the best that we could. Mm-hmm. And Rosie, from the get-go, has been on board with this project and has been very giving in terms of what she's been willing to share with us. You know, for children of Holocaust survivors, it's a very difficult thing to try to understand what your parents went through, to kind of, in many cases, read between the lines, because these are stories they might not have been comfortable sharing with their children in a very linear fashion. So you're trying to kind of piece together these stories that you've been given as a child, you know, in some kind of tricky and maybe kind of anecdotal lesson sort of ways.
And there must be also a great sense of being torn between perpetuating the history, telling the history, passing it on, because what's the expression? Those who do not know history are doomed to repeat it.
Right.
But also wanting to put the past behind, especially if it's your parents' past and the door is closed.
Sure. Well, and, you know, that's the idea of coming to the U.S. and having this safe home and this safe kitchen, is the idea that you have been able to come to the U.S. and build a new home, mm-hmm. and move forward. Celebrate the fact that you've survived rather than focus on the horrible things that you've just endured. I think the exhibit does a good job of kind of doing both.
Mm-hmm.
You can can't, like you just said, you can't really understand your present unless you put it in the context of your past. And for a family of this nature, particularly in 1950, they very much are a product of what they've just survived and experienced. It's with them in every task that they do throughout their day. So their history is all around them. But yes, it is a story of survival. It's a story of coming to the U.S. and rebuilding. So in many ways, it becomes the immigrant story of so many people, not just this particular family, but what America has represented for families throughout history of being able to come here and rebuild. And then it becomes a story of merging your culture and your traditions with your new surroundings. And so the story also is about the local Jewish community in 1950 and what they were able to offer this family in terms of a welcome mat, and in terms of a community to fit into, and services, and all kinds of things that helped the Kaplan family establish roots here in the city.
So you also had the chance to not just find out this family history. And by the way, is Mrs. Kaplan able to come out to see it? Or
no. Well, Rosie Kaplan, the daughter, yes. She was actually here last week for the opening. Or I'm sorry, she was here.
Be Mrs. Kaplan. My apologies.
Right.
Sorry.
Rosie Kaplan Goldenberg. She came out for our VIP opening, which was wonderful. I mean, these magical experiences that we get when we take these people who have worked with us on these You Are Theirs into these places that they knew as a child can be actually kind of an emotional experience.
I would think
It can be pretty beautiful to see their expressions.
Yeah. And we've actually had several people who we are portraying in this space. One of the unique things about the You Are There model, if you will, is that we're not creating composite characters. You know, a lot of times when you see people in costume, there might be facets of their personality that are taken from several individuals. We do the best that we can to be as authentic, not only with the recreation of the physical space, but also with the characters. So, we've had the census worker that we're portraying in the space come in, Charlotte Epstein, who was an interpreter and a tutor in the area. She has also been able to come in and see what the Kaplan kitchen was like. So to be able to take that much care with personal stories, because I mean, everybody, you know, if someone's going to talk about you, you want them to say the right things,
right,
and portray you in
the way you see yourself.
Exactly,
right? Yeah.
Exactly. So the fact that our research team is able to go in and recreate these lives, and then people who come into the space can talk about whatever they'd like. You know, if you want to ask Mrs. Kaplan about what it was like to lose family members, you can do that.
Right.
If you want to talk to her about what's in her chicken soup, you can talk about that. If you want to look in the refrigerator, this is set during Passover. So, how did she organize her kitchen? How did she do the best that she could to maintain a kosher environment with the restrictions of their current home? You know, all of those things are on the table. If you want to talk about, you know, getting the kids to eat again, you know, one of the things that touched my heart when we were going through the research process was the fact that they talked about these children ages 2 and 3 coming over to the U.S. and they couldn't eat any of the food. They couldn't keep any of it down. Everything was too rich for them.
Oh,
so,
wow.
You know, this is a year later, and she'll talk to you, Mrs. Kaplan will talk to you about how her daughter doesn't eat very well. And so whenever she wakes up from her nap, the kids are always unfortunately taking a nap when you visit, because
right,
we can't have
child labor laws and all that.
Child labor laws and all that. But, you know, she tries to feed her nuts and things that have lots of protein in them that are going to help her to gain weight. So it's all those little touches. Every time you go into the space, you're going to have a different experience, and the experience that you want to have, and learn the things that you want to learn.
That's and the rigorousness of the research, and the fact that, Eloise, it strikes me every time we talk about one of the You Are There exhibitions, I think of how much you have the real life experience of a psychology degree, you and your team, because you have to be very cautious, because Ms. Kaplan, who came to the VIP opening, was that child at 2 or 3 who was having trouble finding something to eat and, frankly, probably didn't feel like eating, because her home that she knew was in the resettlement camp in Germany, and suddenly she's across the ocean in this place where the trees are different, the seasons are probably different.
Right.
And so you have to be really – there's some – gingerly ways you have to ask some things.
There really are, and I'm always struck by the generosity that people have with us in terms of their willingness to trust us with their stories.
Yeah.
You know, when we do something like the You Are There 1920, the Prohibition, the people in that scene are no longer with us.
Right.
But certainly you are there Robert Kennedy, and then this one as well. These are stories that are very much in people's living memories, and most of the people are still alive to help us tell these stories. So you're dealing with memory, and memory can be a very tricky thing. And you know what you remember and how you remember it in its context can be very difficult to try to navigate through.
Mm-hmm.
I think number one, my job is to listen to people and to try to understand how I can bring a history background to give some context to their very personal stories.
Mm-hmm.
And the You Are There program in general does that. It tries to say, you know, everybody's experience is extraordinary and worth telling. How can we put that in the context of a history that we all share? And so far, I've had nothing but luck in terms of the people that we've worked with, understanding that that is the greater goal, and being willing to share with us those details, stories about not eating as a child and those sorts of things, lullabies that Mrs. Kaplan would sing to them as a child, to trust us enough to share that with us, and trust that we will use that as a way to teach about, you know, what it was like to raise children in a new community where there's a language barrier, and all these wonderful lessons behind these sweet little stories that people share with us that they don't necessarily think are anything that we'll be interested in.
Sure.
That are, in the end, what ends up making these You Are Theirs, the magic that
and
they are.
And that's what makes history, is the accretion of tiny moments.
It is.
Is 1968 the most contemporary, most recent year you've
it
visited?
Is.
I picture a big planning chart on the wall somewhere at the
yes.
Indiana History Center deep within your offices. In the future, will we see more recent history?
We don't have one slated
okay.
To be more recent than that.
Yeah.
You know, we have them selected. We have the next four selected and Ooh. In development. And then after that, it's kind of open. So we are certainly always calling the collection, looking for new images as they come in. You know, when we find the right image, we go for it. We do try to always have a menu up in terms of location in the state where the photograph was taken, and also era, date, so that the stories are giving a wide expanse of Indiana history.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, 1968 so far is the most recent one that we've tackled.
Well, and if people have photographs, you know, we're always talking about how we are the stewards of
right.
Indiana's history, and that doesn't mean that you have to be famous. It doesn't mean
Not
that you
at
have
all.
To be rich. And a lot of the wealth of our 1.7 million photographs right now are earlier photographs. We
right.
find
mm-hmm.
a lot of times people are hanging on to things, and once it passes through a couple of generations, they know that those photographs are important, and they know that they shouldn't get rid of them, but they are at a loss at what to do. And the Indiana Historical Society is one venue that can help with that. So if you have a photograph in your personal collections that you think would make an excellent You Are There, or maybe there would be a place for it in Destination Indiana, which is our touchscreen kind of time travel journey,
mm-hmm.
You know, consider making the Indiana Historical Society the steward of those items, and we can work with you to, you know, get scanned copies and all those sorts of things. But it's so important for us to maintain the ability to cover all eras. And
yep.
so we're always looking for people to help us with that.
Sharon Gamble with Eloise Scroggins, Director of Exhibitions Research, and Amy Lamb, Media Relations Manager from the Indiana Historical Society. You can see You Are There, 1950, Making a Jewish Home, through September 29th of next year at the Indiana History Center. You can learn more at indianahistory.org.
Trick or treat.
Who's that at the door? Sharon?
I think it might be ghosts of arts events past.
Oh, wow. Those are kind of scary.
They're calling mm-hmm. upon us to tell them what they can do in the coming week
mm-hmm.
for our calendar we call
What'll we
boo? What do you got?
Oh, dear.
Something even fun, scarier than ghosts of arts events past. It's unfunded arts events. Or that'd be sad.
Oh my goodness.
No.
Okay. Where'd that come
I
from?
Don't know. Awful scary. Bad costumes. Okay. So things going on this weekend that sound like actually a lot of fun. You can treat your ears to the sweet sounds of the Indiana Winds Symphony's Halloween theme concert, which is taking place on Sunday, October 30th. That's this Sunday at 6:30 p.m. at the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts. And Halloween treats on the program include Ghost Train, an entertaining tour de force for concert band composed by Eric Whitaker, one of the most successful American composers of the past decade, and Butler University's composer in residence. And there's also a whole bunch of other fun work, including music from Star Wars and Wicked, and all types of spooky fun things featuring music director Charles Conrad, who will be leading his costume cast of musicians as they will be performing this haunted concert. It sounds like a great time.
Wow.
Sunday at 6:30.
And you can wear your costume if you want to, too.
There you go.
There you go.
A great place to wear your costume.
Have you heard or seen the commercials for the Children's Museum's haunted house this year?
Oh, the Vampire Vacation,
love,
right?
I love the little characters, especially the little girl who talks about a vampire vacation.
Well, there's still time to go check that out.
There's still time to go check that out. And there's also time to climb aboard a tractor pulled hay wagon, sit close, and prepare to be scared silly as the Headless Horseman rides again. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, goodness.
Wait.
I don't know.
Where's your head?
Oh.
Come back.
That was my pumpkin.
Oh, okay. Where are you doing this? You're doing this at Connor Prairie, where you're weaving in and around the wooded areas. And you can also join in the fun at a hoedown, belt out some tunes with scaryoke, make a gooey s'more over a fire. I know. Don't you wish you'd invented that? Make a gooey s'more over fire. Get your portrait taken on Saturday night with the Headless Horseman in the new Portrait Gallery. And grab a front row seat at the Legend of Sleepy Hollow Puppet Show. Boy, this event has grown dramatically. Also available out at Connor Prairie, caramel dipped apples from the Apple Store. All that going on through this Saturday at Connor Prairie. Yay.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. That'll be a lot of fun. Okay. Hey, something else you can wear your costume to is when you go see some great plays at the Phoenix Theater this weekend. They are having a weekend special. You can see Spring Awakening and Jericho. Spring Awakening, it's the last weekend for that. Jericho has just opened, and if you buy tickets for both, you can get them for $30, but you have to buy them at the same time. They do have performances, Spring Awakening Saturday at 6 and Sunday at 5, and Jericho Saturday at 8:30 and Sunday at 2:30. A great way to see some great plays at the Phoenix this weekend. Nothing scary about that at all.
Hey, if you are listening on Friday night, make plans to go early to the Indianapolis Arts Center. This Saturday, noon to 5, is their annual free celebration of Dia de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead. All sorts of great family-friendly activities, art activities, sugar skull decorating, painting, dancing, free music, put a little folding money in your pocket. There's great food available to purchase. If you're hearing us on Saturday, you better scurry to get over there. But remember, the altar exhibit stays open for a little while longer, so you have several days to still take that in at the Indianapolis Arts Center.
Very good. Hey, you know what's starting next week, Sharon?
What's that?
Spirit in Place.
Oh,
it's their 16th year.
Not that kind of
And it's
though.
The focus on the body.
The body. That's
I
right.
I ain't got no body. That's what the skeleton said. Anyway, bad Halloween jokes. But they are having their 16th annual Spirit in Place. Over 100 different organizations are participating in this. And there are so many events, you can't even shake a stick at them. But we've been covering quite a lot on Art of the Matter the past couple weeks, and we'll continue to do so in the next few weeks. But just want to let everyone know that if you go to spiritandplace.org, then you can print out a program or get details on all the 45 different Spirit in Place programs and events and make your own calendar for it. But the big opening is coming up on November 4th and 5th. And as part of that, the Butler University Chamber Dance Ensemble is going to be doing a piece on bodies at work, rest, and play. And they'll be performing at different public spaces downtown. And in fact, that's going to start on Friday at noon at the City Market. And then there's also going to be another performance on Saturday at the Circle Center Mall Food Court, which is going to be kind of fun with those performances taking place.
Love that. You know, it's become such a wonderful part of our community and absolutely unique to our community, this particular kind of citywide festival.
That's right.
This is not part of Spirit in Place, but it's a great opportunity to do something with your kids. There's it started with the idea, what happens when the big bad wolf decides he doesn't want to be big or bad anymore? What happens when the big bad wolf wants to be a good guy? Well, he's off on a mission to become a hero, no matter how many people tell him
It's Impossible. And this is a theatrical presentation that's a partnership between Wisdom Tooth Theater Project and Betty Rage Productions. It's called Once Upon a Wolf, and it takes place at the Earth House on November 5th, 12th, and 19th. And it's family-friendly. Adults will appreciate that it's kind of has a fractured fairy tale quality about it, and the kids will just appreciate the visuals and the story. So, Big Bad Wolf, Once Upon a Wolf at Earth House, November 5th, 12th, and 19th.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. Hey, if you didn't get enough opportunity to wear your Halloween costumes, then here's one more for you. Coming up next weekend on the 4th, this is also part of Spirit in Place, is the opening of Kyle Ragsdale's new show, which is all about costumes, and they're paintings inspired by costumes. Costumery is the show, and it's taking place at the Harrison Center for the Arts next Friday night, and attendees of the opening are encouraged to come in costume. So if you didn't get enough chances to wear your Halloween costume, wear it to that as part of that show.
What are you going as this year?
I can't tell you. It's a surprise.
Oh.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. My yes? Halloween character had had a particular role in British history during the Edwardian era.
Hmm.
And this person's life story was made into a fantastic PBS miniseries a number of years ago.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's okay. A pretty good clue.
Yeah, it really is.
Okay.
Hey, I'm going to switch gears a moment here and talk about... I'm going to skip ahead a couple of holidays.
Go ahead.
I know.
Are you talking Christmas?
I am indeed. The Stutz Artists Association's holiday exhibit starts on November 18th with work by approximately 50 artists working in a variety of media. Things available in every price range, and that's Friday, November 18th from 5 to 9. Free admission. You can shop for one of the winter holidays, or heck, just shop for yourself.
There you go.
I'm just saying.
Well, then the last thing I'm going to put on the calendar is the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra has announced that all their holiday tickets are on sale right now, and this includes their classical Christmas, which is just a beautiful concert taking place at the Scottish Rite Cathedral Ballroom, as well as their performance of Handel's Messiah. And then, of course, they've got lots of other crazy fun concerts going on, all part of that Yuletide celebration.
Yeah.
That is coming up. So anything that you want, whether it's from Messiah to classical to the Yuletide, are all on sale right now for the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra.
Yay. Last thing I have, a week from this Sunday on November 6th at 2 o'clock, it's a free concert at the Learning Curve at Central Library, part of the series Hot Jazz for Cool Kids, and you can hear the Bill Langton Quartet.
Very fun.
Yeah, fun for kids of all ages, including our age.
Very good. Well, we will see you in costume or out of costume.
That's right.
Next week on that calendar we call
What'll
We Do?
Boo.
That's right, Sharon.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
The Indie Acoustic Cafe series brings some of the most talented singer-songwriters to Indy for intimate concerts where listening to the music is truly the focus. Travis DiNicola spoke with the Acoustic Cafe's Mark Butterfield to find out more.
Mark, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Always great to see you.
Thank you, Travis.
You know, you have been doing something pretty unique and unusual and very cool, I must say, in bringing this music series to Indianapolis over the past how many years?
This is our 15th season, believe it or not.
Wow. Well, and I know that, and we were just talking before we went on the air, I was a little worried at the end of last season that I know this has been a little bit tough to do, but then you came back this season and you've got an incredible lineup again.
I think that this season, of all the 15 seasons I've been doing, is the best overall lineup I've put together.
You've got some great talent. I mean, just some really amazing talent. I mean, looking at the website that you guys have for IndieAcousticCafeSeries.com and everything from Tom Chapin and James House, and just the list goes on and on. amazing stuff.
It is. It's kind of funny that some of these shows, I just finished one on October 1st with Pierce Pettis and Ari Hest, and that was a great way to kick off the season. That was another sellout. I mean, last season, five of these seven shows were sold out, and three of those five I had to turn people away at the door.
Now, describe to me sort of the setting that you have, because it's pretty intimate, you know, acoustic. I mean, basically, what you're trying to do is have great musicians in a small, intimate space for people who really want to hear the music, right?
Exactly. It's not a bar. It's a listening room. It seats about 160 people is all I can get in there. It's just very cozy, very quaint. The sound is fantastic, and it is kind of unusual when people pass through and they play here, or they come to a show and they say, well, how long have you been doing this? I've never heard of it before. Well, this is our 15th year.
Oh, there you go. They need to hear about it. So, and physically, where is it located? In Fountain Square?
In Fountain Square, at the Wheeler Community Arts Theater building, right behind the supermarket there in Fountain Square, as well as right beside the police station.
Okay, okay. So you can, you know, both get your food and nourishment in other ways and feel safe. Okay, so give me the lineup that that you've got. Talk me through what you've got coming up with the series this year.
Well, coming up on November 5th is our second show of the season with Tom Chapin. And, of course, Tom, everybody knows his history. The Chapin family, very talented. It's Harry Chapin's brother. And, you know, years ago, Tom had a television show on Saturday mornings, and he's done a lot of kids recordings, a lot of adult recordings. At one point, the New York Times said he was one of the greatest personalities in contemporary folk music. So Tom is an amazing performer. I saw him earlier this summer at a festival in upstate New York, and he just he blew the crowd away.
Yeah.
Next up
I
after that,
I can only imagine. That's just going to be a great show.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of history with having Tom Chapin there. So after that, on November 19th, I have James House from Nashville. And James is someone who is predominantly just a songwriter. And I hate to say just a songwriter, but he doesn't really tour and doesn't want to. He'd rather stay at home and write hits.
So how'd you get him here?
I've known James for years, and I just come up with the idea when I was putting this series together. I said, you know, it's time I have him come up and play. He's had four number one singles and a Grammy.
Now, which are those?
The singles, Ain't That Lonely Yet, This Is Me Missing You, Little by Little, and Don't Quit Now, another single called Hard Times for an Honest Man.
Okay.
So, you know, it's kind of unusual to have somebody who isn't actually a true hit maker come up and play the series.
That's very cool.
So it's going to be a lot of fun that night.
Yeah, yeah, I imagine it will be.
And absolutely. I know what people's going to say. Well, I've never heard of him, but I've heard his songs.
But you know the music, exactly.
So you can either come up to the show and see the person who writes the hits, or you can stay at home and watch him get another Grammy sometime down the road.
Yeah, not a bad thing either. and these are acoustic shows, generally?
Yeah, they're all solo.
Yeah, okay.
After that, we got a lot of break, a little bit of break after the November 19th show. We start back up on January the 14th with Vance Gilbert and Griffin House, and no relation to James.
I was wondering, okay.
Yeah, but Vance has played the series before. It's been about 8 or 9 years. Vance is an unbelievable live performer. You just never know what you're going to get with Vance. Very entertaining, very talented. After that, on March 4th, we have Katie Curtis. March 17th, we have Ellis Paul, who's played the series quite a bit. Ellis is another one who's just a phenomenal singer-songwriter. He's someone back in 1991 I found playing on the streets of Boston. Then after that, Craig Fuller on April the 7th.
Okay.
And Craig, original founding member of Pure Prairie League, and now has been playing with Little Feet quite a bit.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So Craig is a great songwriter and has been a fantastic songwriter his whole career. But he's going to come up, and again, he's doing it pretty much as a friend.
Yeah.
So after that, April the 28th is Jonathan Edwards. And Jonathan has never even played in Annapolis before. So he's been doing
what's
this.
What's his music like?
It's all, it's another folk artist. But he's been all over the board over the years.
Now, do you meet a lot of these guys through going to other fairs and festivals, or?
The two festivals I'm predominantly involved in during the summer months is when I see a lot of these.
Yeah.
And I come back thinking, you know, they'd be a good hit for this.
Mm-hmm.
But I get CDs literally every day in the mm-hmm. mail of people wanting to come play the series.
Mm-hmm.
I can honestly do a show every Friday and Saturday night year round.
Yeah, if you could, that'd be great. I mean,
yeah.
Cause, well, and musicians love it because it's, yeah. it's, I mean, people are actually there to hear them. And as you said, it's, you know, great acoustics and nice and intimate and just a really different, you know, music that maybe some people are used to hearing in a bar, but it's not in a bar.
Right. Yeah, I don't want to be that type of atmosphere.
Yeah.
I want people to come to the show, sit down, relax, and when they leave, know that they've listened to some really talented singer-songwriters mm-hmm. and appreciate the music.
Now, who is coming to your shows? Because I know that a good number of them do sell out. You've got a regular audience that comes to it?
Or? I do. The amazing thing, I have an email list of about 3,000 people
mm-hmm.
and that have attended the shows over the years. And then I have a snail mail list of about another 1,000. And I pretty much, beginning of the season, I send out to all those folks. But after that, I let them know who's coming and
sure.
and the dates and the website again, and then that's about it. But yeah, it's kind of funny that the same people come over and over. There is a large group of those folks, and they are so musically literate. It's unbelievable. They blow me away.
Now, what about families? Are you seeing that at all?
Some, but we do sell, you know, the beer and wine at the shows,
yeah. mm-hmm.
and so it's we really can't do that.
Yeah, okay.
You got to be over 21.
Got it. Okay. Okay. Cool. So, what is it that, you know, if someone's listening right now and they haven't been to one of the Acoustic Cafe shows that you really want to make sure that they hear or that they know about so that they come down and see one of the shows?
Well, get on the website. Which is www.indy, spelled with a Y,
mm-hmm.
acousticcafeseries.com. And you'll see this season as well as links to everyone that we've had in years past and their website. So you can go back and check, you know, all about those musicians. But, you know, take a chance. I mean, this is the, mm-hmm. the cheapest ticket in town as far as quality of entertainment that you're going to find.
Yeah.
And it's free parking. I always want to stress that. Just take a chance, come to a show, and you'll leave happy.
Okay. Mark, looking forward to seeing you at more acoustic cafes this season. Lots of great shows coming up, and always just a terrific venue and terrific season you put on.
Thank you, Travis. Thanks for having me back.
You bet.
Travis DiNicola with the Indy Acoustic Cafe's Mark Butterfield. You can hear Grammy winner Tom Chapin at the cafe on November 5th at the Wheeler Community Arts Theater, 1035 Sanders in Fountain Square. Doors open at 6:30 and the show begins at 7:30. You can get your tickets at IndieAcousticCafeSeries.com or at the door. That website again, IndieAcousticCafeSeries.com. Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 when we kick off November with an all Travis show.
All right. I'll meet the winner of the Indiana Authors Award, chat with Don Steffi about the Indianapolis Children's Choir, and talk with a panel of artists about nudes in art. Plus, we'll also have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and by the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting the 2011-2012 season in three first-class venues. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.